noticed this morning that in the announcements, I think both services, it was announced that we're going to have an abbreviated service tonight. I don't know if you know what that was for, but I know what that was for. All right? In Ezekiel chapter 22, God was having Ezekiel explain why Judah is in the trouble that it's in. Why it is, at this in this case, why it's in Babylon. And he has he has Ezekiel pronounce judgments in kind of strange ways. He says in chapter 22, to start it out, the word of the Lord came to me, son of man, will you judge her? And he goes on and you find out who her is. Her is the city of Jerusalem. And he will tell why judgment is about to be brought or has been brought on Jerusalem. And then he'll go down through that chapter. And in verse 23, he'll say again, the word of the Lord came to me, son of man, say to the land. He's going to pronounce a judgment on the land. It actually is not a judgment on the land as much as it is the inhabitants of the land. But it's really interesting how he says it. He says, you are a land that has no shower or no rain or showers in the day of wrath. There is the conspiracy of her princes. And then you drop down to verse 26, her priests do violence. Verse 27, her officials within her are like wolves tearing their prey. Verse 28, her prophets whitewash these deeds for them by false visions and lying divinations. Verse 29, the people of the land. And so by the time he gets through, he's encompassed everybody that lives in the land. And then, and he talks about, and just to get kind of a flavor for what he's saying, let's just go about halfway down, start with verse 27. Her officials within her are like wolves tearing their prey. They shed blood and kill people to make unjust gain. Her prophets whitewash these deeds for them by false visions and lying divinations. In other words, they preach sermons that'll justify what's going on. They don't confront the sin that's going on. They say, this is what the sovereign Lord says, when the Lord has not spoken. The people of the land practice extortion, commit robbery, they oppress the poor, the needy, mistreat the alien, deny them justice. And then he says, I look for a man among them who would build up the wall and stand before me in the gap on behalf of the land so that I would not have to destroy it. But I found none. And then consequently, he said, since he's pronounced this judgment on the land, and he's looking for somebody who'll rectify the wrongs, who'll take a stand against these things that are going on, and nobody could be found. He says, so I will pour out my wrath on them and consume them with my fiery anger, bringing down on their own heads all they have done, declares the sovereign Lord. One of Israel's darkest hours, it was, characterized by complacency, by compromise, by violence. And God looked for a man to rectify the wrongs, and he didn't find a man. And so he said, consequently, here's what I'm going to do. And you know what he did to the land. He utterly destroyed the city, took the people away, and then actually the land itself had rest because these violent people were taken out of her, and these people that committed all these offenses. God has, I would suggest, always been searching for a man. And I don't mean just a man as opposed to a woman. He has been searching for someone to take a stand in times of difficulty, in times of evil, in times of peril. Somebody who has the courage to, as he will say, to build up the wall and to stand in the gap. To say, no, this is where it ends. And you're not going to come in here. And it will cleanse what's on the inside and put all of the evil on the outside. And there have been times when God found such a man. Noah was such a man, wasn't he? Moses was such a man. Gideon, Samson, Deborah. God's looking for men today in a time when our society, and maybe to some degree our the Lord's church, is characterized by complacency and compromise. And these men, these women that God is searching for, it's not just anybody. It's somebody who has certain characteristics. And so for our abbreviated lesson tonight, I'll share with you four characteristics that I believe are common to every man that God has ever chosen or every woman that He's ever chosen for such a task. And the first one is God is looking for men, and when I say that, I mean men or women, of conviction. God can take a coward and make him brave. He's done it. God can take a cripple and make him strong. He's done it. God can take an illiterate person and make him wise. He's done it. But God can never use a man with no conviction. A person who's going to be God's man, God's woman, and stand in the gap and build up the wall, it has to be a person with conviction. And I would suggest to you that good old boys are killing the church. You remember a young man by the name of Daniel. Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Guess what everybody else was doing? Well, they were enjoying all the king's dainties, weren't they? They were enjoying all of this new food, and they became a part of the society in which they lived, and so they couldn't be that person. But he was a person of conviction. It takes conviction to be different. I read one time, and I can't vouch for the truth of it because I don't know this person, but I read one time of a young missionary who was overseas in a country that had oil, and there were American oil companies there, and one of the officials in the oil industry there in that country noticed him for his leadership and came to him and offered him his yearly salary per month. In other words, 12 times his salary. And the missionary said no. And then he doubled it. And the missionary said no. And he said, well, is the salary not large enough? He said, no, the job is not large enough. He needs men with conviction. In fact, he can't use somebody that won't have the conviction of our beliefs and is not willing to stand for what we believe. God is looking for men in every walk of life who will put him first and not waiting around to be told what to do, but whose conviction demands that we act and that we stand. God is secondly looking for men of conflict. There's plenty of conflict going on today, just not the right kind. In Matthew chapter 10, Jesus is preparing his disciples for the reality that they're going to face. They've kind of been living in the honeymoon stage here when they're with Jesus, and he's been taking care of every problem that comes up, and he's been doing so in grand style. But now tells them that he's about to leave them, and they're going to be left, and he's giving them marching instructions. And included in all of that, he wants them to not be surprised by the reality when it comes. And Monday morning, when it rolls around. And so he said, do not suppose that I've come to bring peace to the earth. I did not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I've come to turn a man against his father, a daughter against her mother, a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. A man's enemies will be members of his own household. Anyone who loves his father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Anyone who loves his son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. Anyone who does not take his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Whoever finds his life will lose it. And whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. That's reality, isn't it? When we take a stand. When we refuse to compromise, when we refuse to accept what the world, to be pressed into the world's mold. In 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 12, Paul admonishes us, fight the good fight of faith. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 13 and 14, take on you the whole armor of God, and having done all to stand, stand, therefore. Stand in the gap. Build the wall. God is not a God of failure. God is not a God of defeat. God has never lost a battle, and He never will lose a battle. God wins. He always wins. God is looking for men who are willing to go to battle for the right cause and willing to pay the ultimate price, who do not love our lives so much that we are afraid to die. It was David who said, whenever his brothers were ridiculing him, whenever the giant had come out and challenged God's people, and here he was, a young lad, come to visit his brothers that he looked up to who were in the military. They'd gone through boot camp. They were seasoned veterans of the army. And here comes this giant out, and he challenges God's army, and he looks around to see which one of his brothers is going to be the first one to step forward, because he knows that they will. But as he looks at them, then it begins to dawn on him, as they hang their heads, they're not going to step forward. And everyone around him, as he looks around him incredulously, is afraid. And he can't believe it, because he's not afraid. And he says, who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he would defy the army of the living God? And his brothers, it embarrasses them. And so they chastise him, and they say, go back to that little group, little knot of sheep that you're supposed to be taking care of. I know what you came here for. You just came here so you could watch, see what's going on. Get back there to those few little scrawny sheep that you're supposed to be taking care of. And David responds, what have I done? Is there not a cause? God needs men like that who are not afraid, who will say, why would you be surprised? Why would you be upset that I would say that? Is there not a cause? Is God's name not being blasphemed? Is there not someone who's going to step forward and stand in the gap and build a wall? And so God is looking for men of conflict for the right cause. And then thirdly, God's men looking for men of consecration. There are some songs that we sing, that I sing, that sometimes I ask myself, should I be singing this song? Where He leads me, I will follow. I'll go with Him all the way. And the song walks us through some places, including the garden and the cross. I'll go with Him. And we need to ask ourselves, should I be making this claim? Should I be singing this song if it's not true of me? Is it not just as real if I sing it as if I say it? And we need to sing with the Spirit, but also with the understanding. Sometimes we may have set limits and boundaries on how far we're willing to go with Jesus. And in fact, we say, I'll go with Him wherever He leads me. But if He leads me over here, then I'm not going there. Ira Stamphill wrote the following words, which have been put to music. O Jesus, if I die upon a foreign field someday, 'twould be no more than love demands, no less could I repay. No greater love hath mortal man than for a friend to die. These are the words He gently spoke to me. If just a cup of water I place within your hand, then just a cup of water is all that I demand. But if by death to living they can thy glory see, I'll take my cross and follow close to thee. Our young people desperately need to witness examples of consecration. God's looking for men of consecration. Something more than lukewarm enthusiasm. Something more than half-hearted commitment. It's hard to sacrifice until you see that it can be done, until you have someone to follow. It's hard to be a Christian until you see one, and you see one who's happy about being a Christian and is excited about it and is totally committed to that cause. then you're much more likely to be able to become one yourself. In 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 19 and 20, "What? Know you not that your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit, which is in you, which you have of God? And you are not your own. You're bought with a price. Therefore, glorify God in your body and in your spirit, which are God's." God's looking for men of consecration. And then last, God is looking for men of compassion and concern. I dare say that it's hypocritical to claim to be a Christian and not be responsive to the needs of others. People who care. People who are truly concerned. Not just from the lips out, but who wash dirty feet when nobody knows. Who serves people who have no way of repaying you and who desire no repayment. Except that God be aware that we're serving on His behalf. Jesus was never hardened to the needs of others. And I suppose that's never more obvious than when He was in agony, in the throes of agony during His crucifixion, and the Bible says He, looking down from the cross, He saw His mother. And He knew that she was going to be left in dire straits. And so He said to His mother, "Behold your son." And He probably nodded at John standing there. He never was without compassion. Even in His very darkest hour, He was not thinking of Himself, but He was thinking of the needs of others. Lay not this sin to their charge. Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. No thought for His own welfare, but only for the welfare of others. God needs people like that, who will serve and serve and use ourselves up in serving because of our compassion. Until you can accept the burden and realize the debt, God is not going to be able to use you very effectively. Remember, it was Paul who said, "I'm a debtor to all men. I owe everybody." Well, I would much prefer to say, "I don't owe anybody anything." Paul said, "I'm a debtor to all men." And that drove him to become the person that he was. God said, "And I searched for a man among them." And then He sadly said, "But I found none." There wasn't anybody. And we say, "God, I hope you find your man." God's looking for people of conviction, of conflict, of consecration, of compassion and concern. And He says to such a person, "Come unto me, and I'll give you something to live for. And I'll give you something to die for." And so our question, my question to me and to you tonight is, will you be God's man and God's woman? He's looking for a man to stand in the gap, to build up the walls, to stand against the evil in this world, to be a living example to those who come behind so that they can follow in your footsteps while we sing.